Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Greetings, my friends, and welcome to another episode of the Video Nasty Project. I'm here with my good friend, what do your friends call you?
Tinkerbell, sometimes Stinkerbell, but I don't like them.
Oh, okay. I'm here with my good friend Tink, and once I get done here, I'm going to go watch The Fun House.
Ooh, what's that?
Oh, have you ever seen anything by Tobe Hooper?
No,
he's the one that did the Texas Chainsaw. Oh, you probably know.
That sounds kind of spooky.
Yeah.
I don't like that one. I like to watch movies about tinkers, or maybe I go to the fairy tale hall and they tell me all kinds of fairy stories.
Not the same thing at all.
That's okay.
I just had the greatest idea.
Let's spend the night.
In the fun house.
This better be good.
It's gonna be great.
Something is alive in the funhouse. Something deadly. Something evil.
I don't know what that thing is.
Something that tonight will turn the funhouse into a carnival of terror. The funhouse, rated R.
We should tell them what the hell the movie is.
What are we talking about?
By the way, the movie we saw was The Funhouse by Tobe Hooper from 1981. Not to be confused with The Last House on Dead End Street, which was also running under the title of The Fun House.
Only Fun Space House.
And that's how we think the Tobe Hooper version wound up on the list, because the sensorials didn't quite have the wherewithal to be able to make the distinction between the two movies.
So one belonged on the nasties list, one didn't. They picked the wrong one.
So the movie is actually really super simple. You've got these four kids, varying teenagerish age, we're guessing, and they go to a carnival. And we follow them for the first 40 minutes or so of the movie, of them wandering around this low-rent, skeezy carnival. Mm-hmm. And they're interacting with the assorted, colorful characters. They go to the fortune teller, and they're high as fuck, so they're all like, they... not serious at all.
I mean, we see them, toking up a couple points during the movie, so we know for a fact they're stoned.
They go to the freak show where they've got the two-headed horse and the bull with the cleft lip.
Mm-hmm.
And, importantly...
little fetus in a jar. There's a lot of foreshadowing in that scene, to be honest.
And so after we follow them around for a little while... interacting with the colorful characters, one of them gets the brilliant idea of, hey, let's go to the fun house and we'll hide there. And when they close down, we'll stay there, we'll smoke more weed, and we'll have some sex. So they get on the ride, Frankenstein straps them in, and the car goes into the fun house. They hop out, car comes out, they shut the place down, and that's where the story begins. So Frankenstein takes the fortune teller into the basement, and probably the most disturbing scene of the movie, where Frankenstein tries to bone the fortune teller wearing his mask, comes prematurely. She's like, yep, no refunds. And he freaks out and kills her. The Barker comes in and he's like, oh no, you killed one of the family, son of a bitch. And that's when the lighter falls out of one of the kids' pockets.
Richie's pocket.
Out of Richie's pocket. And we've got visitors, and now we got to go get to business. And then the rest of the movie is them doing this cat and mouse inside the funhouse.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the movie.
Well, the other thing, though, that besides the fact that, oh, no, these kids witnessed the murder,
mm-hmm.
Richie, because he's a dumbass, stole the funhouse money.
To be fair, okay, he was high as fuck, and the door was right there, and they thought they would be able to get out, but they couldn't. So he grabbed the money, they couldn't get out, and by then it was too late.
Because I think the Barker might have been a little less adamant about going after them if the money hadn't been involved.
And it was a pretty significant role. It was a pretty thick wad he ran off with.
Well, and I like that they use it as a motif. throughout the movie. And with Richie later, when you have the initial attack, he's the first one to go. Mm-hmm. And when they initially attack him, it's a noose around his neck and he's pulled up. And as he vanishes into the ceiling, some of the money flutters down. And when Richie reappears later, and Buzz is tricked into killing him, as he rolls off for his final thing, there's more money. So there's this whole motif of the money all around. Like, this was Richie's sin that he's paying for, is that he stole the money. Which is an interesting, it's a touch that I could see somebody like Tobe Hooper thinking about. Yeah.
We probably should throw some brilliance at the setting a horror movie inside of a funhouse, because the setting is just so brilliant. You've got all the lighting, mm-hmm. the weird, mannequins hanging around, just the sparks from the trolley cars.
Tobe Hooper specifically reached out and got the guy who did the lighting for the movie The Warriors because he wanted that lighting in the movie. And it's utilized greatly. Oh, there's a lot of shadow play in this movie that is just done really well.
Well, sure. And that makes perfect sense. Again, this with the dark ride, like you said, you've got the lights. You've got with the mannequins, that means you can have characters effectively hiding in plain sight. Because if it's dark, it's hard to tell. Is that a person? Is that a mannequin?
Plenty of opportunities for jump scares.
Oh, yeah. I've seen, as a connoisseur and actually worker at haunted houses, that's a classic trick you'll do of, either as a misdirection, is that a real person over there? Is it not? And then it's a great way to do that kind of work. And in this movie, it's really effective in the, you can use the dark ride also as a distraction. Oh, an effect's going off. We're reacting to the effect and we're not noticing, well, there's something else over here we should be paying attention to and we're not.
And that was one thing also highlighting that what you mentioned a little bit down the line, that you thought Frankenstein was very innocent, very, he's doesn't know what he's doing.
When he's going to kill Liz, there's an implication that he's not really menacing. It's, well, Daddy said, I got to come kill you. And when she's trying to distract him by realizing, well, he tried to have sex with the fortune teller, so maybe if I offer him sex, I can distract him long enough to stab him. That he is, oh, sex? Sure. And it never comes off. I mean, sure, that could have gotten to be a very rapey scene. But it does also seem to play on the, considering the role models this kid's had, he probably all he really understands about how sex works.
Women are good for one thing, for fucking. And that's all he knows.
Yeah.
So I think having him dressed as Frankenstein in the beginning, who is an innocent creature, I don't think that was necessarily an accident.
Part of the reasoning behind the Frankenstein mask was used is that the people behind the scenes own the rights to the character.
Well, it's a universal production, therefore we can use the flat top bolts, Karloff look.
They used it specifically because they were told to.
Yeah.
That's the way I interpreted it.
Yeah.
Universal said, we own Frankenstein, use that as the mask.
Well, it could be a case of, well, here's all the properties we have. We got the Wolfman, we got Dracula, and on down the line. And Tobe, okay, well, I have to pick one of you. That one fits thematically with my show.
Yeah.
I'll go with Frankenstein.
Sure. It could be.
Yeah. Yeah, and the creature, I mean, it was designed by Rick Baker.
Oh, and it looked gorgeous. And it looked fabulous.
And it's, it's Rick Baker.
Yeah.
It's with him or Tom Savini or any of those, you're going to get, even though he didn't actually do the on-set makeup, it was somebody else, he designed it, and so it's going to have, there's going to be something there. Again, I think this movie is lesser known probably because it came out when a whole glut of these movies were coming out and it just got a little lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, right around 81, that was, I could easily see getting lost in the shuffle.
Because you already have Halloween out, which the movie, which we'll get to in a minute. You already are getting the early of the Jason films. I don't know that we're quite at Freddy yet.
No, Freddy's 84.
Yeah, so we're not quite at Freddy yet, but there were a lot of slasher films that were coming out at this time. A lot of knockoffs of both Carpenter,
Yeah, pretty much.
Hugh Carpenter and Cunningham for Friday the 13th. But so I can see a movie like this, especially one where the gore was very minimal. There was not really the cool kill factors that you see in other slasher films. And maybe one of the reasons why it didn't get as an extensive penetration into public consciousness as some of the other films.
And it wasn't meant to be taken seriously. All the tips of the hat at the very beginning, where, so it opens, the very first thing it opens with Joey, but we don't know it's Joey yet. Mm. And it's all from his point of view. And then like this gloved black hands, like picks up like a mask and puts on, you get the slit action going on, which is straight out of Halloween. And the point of view moves down the hallway and goes into the shower where Amy's taking a shower at.
And it's Psycho.
And it's suddenly Psycho. And I'm like, that's really clever. And it also sets the audience's expectations. The, hey, we're not taking this very seriously, so you shouldn't either.
There's a red herring factor to Joey that you see this and your initial thought is, okay, Joey's going to be the problem. Turns out he's just doing a bratty little brother prank on his sister, trying to recreate a horror film. Because you look at his room and it's got... the first thing I noticed was, okay, there are posters for horror films. There are Frankenstein and Wolfman masks. He's got fake weaponry on the wall that are all could be associated with horror films.
When I first saw it, I said, this is the kid who reads Fangoria religiously.
Yeah. And so the first thing is, well, he's the killer. And later there are implications that, well, maybe he's going to be part of the resolution of the film. So the fact that he at some point just gets carted off out of the film entirely, out of danger and back home, before, you know, we've even killed off all of our designated victims. Yeah, he was just sort of, just there. The other thing I found interesting, so we were talking about the setting.
Mm-hmm.
I know from the research that you did, this film was, one of the reasons it was filmed in Florida was sketchy child labor laws.
Sketchy child labor laws. They could utilize long shooting schedule with a minor.
But also that's where a lot of carnivals go to spend the off season.
Yeah.
So they had access to a lot of people who were in carnivals. And
a lot of equipment. A
lot of equipment. And it was really easy. Okay, well, let's just, you guys put up a carnival. Yeah, and you know, act as our extras and make sure that the scenes have authenticity to them, and that kind of shows the whole vibe of the place. It's like, well, I've been to that carnival. I've been to carnivals like that. I understand. I'm looking at things like they're playing some of the games. I was like, oh, you won something. Well, okay, maybe that was the non-rigged game. But also just, I mean, things that you don't even see in carnivals any longer. It had a peep show.
The most horrific peep show I have ever seen. Oh, my God. Those were some...
But the impression I get is that was probably very representative of how peep shows were in the early 80s while they still existed. So you're like, oh, it wasn't the greatest peep show. Yeah, but they probably weren't the greatest peep shows.
Oh, no, that's fair enough. That's fine.
So, and then, you had the freak show, which was mostly a lot of deformed animals, and the interesting foreshadowing of a deformed baby in a jar, which is later revealed to be the monster's little brother, who didn't make it. And okay, fine, that's an interesting bit of foreshadowing to the monster himself. It was an interesting touch. They threw it into the dialogue that's what it was. The other thing I found really interesting, though, was the final shot of the movie, where we go to a crane shot up above watching our final girl, Amy, walk away from the whole disaster.
As they're breaking everything
down.
And
the rest of the carnival is blissfully unaware that anything even went on, because it all happened in the dark ride. And so they're just tearing down, because they even said, yeah, this is the last night of the carnival. We're pulling
down. We're leaving in the morning.
I love that crane shot, and there was a crane shot earlier in the movie where Joey is watching everything shut down, and he starts walking away from the funhouse, and the camera just goes back and up and up and keeps on going. And I deeply, deeply love that shot, and the bookend shot. It was so gorgeous.
It was one of those massive construction cranes, the ones that actually that with the telescoping arm, so the arm comes out and then it comes out again.
And the DP said, "I am never shooting another movie without one of these."
This is a very competently made film. These are filmmakers who knew what they were doing. Hooper went out and found people.
The lighting is freaking fantastic. How you don't have to look through the Buzz cuts the slit in the peep show tent, and you don't have to look through the hole to know what he's looking at because the shadows of the girls is plainly evident.
Well, and I love that little bit we noticed was there's duct tape on the outside of the tent where you can tell that Buzz is not the first person who's got a hole in this tent.
Yeah.
There are many, many holes into the peep show.
Yeah. There was forethought in that regard. And then other lighting elements is like in the funhouse itself. This second time through watching it, I actually was like, I'm not watching the characters. I was looking at the lighting because I was like, I had read the bit about his focus on lighting. And so I started watching the lighting and I'm just like, there's a lot of shadow play that is just like, holy cow.
So one thing I was kind of curious about with the funhouse itself is it's a dark ride. You go through a car and you're going through these elements. And as with many funhouses, there was a vague horror theme to it. But there were what I felt were at times incongruous elements. I mean,
it felt very slapdash and kind of this part does not work with this part.
Well, it felt thrown together, which maybe you could argue that it was thrown together by them. But there was this one scene where you're going through a spooky forest and there are skeletons and there's other, and then just sort of randomly Humpty Dumpty. And another scene where they actually spend quite a bit of time in the movie. They're in a room where there is a executioner, you know, the hood, the axe, and right next to him is a saloon piano player.
And then just a little bit down the from there on the ride was the naked girl in the corner, which doesn't really jibe with being family friendly and letting kids in.
Yeah, yeah. It was, we kind of noticed, because she's not a focus of the scene. I mean, this is if you weren't paying attention, but I looked at her and was like, is that character topless with anatomically correct breasts? Why, yes, it is. And yet we saw Joey, the little 12-year-old brother, earlier going on the ride. So, again, sketchy. Maybe they just weren't paying. Maybe it's just one of the things the cops don't pay attention to back then.
And let's be honest, if we were 12 and in that dark ride and we, holy shit, there's boobies! We would totally be in Joey's shoes saying, fuck yeah.
I think a part of what probably lends to all of that is it's a soundstage, ultimately.
Yeah.
And they said, all right, we got to mock up the funhouse ride. And without clear communication, they went to people and went to the folks who were the laborers and went, dress the set.
I did see a credit for the animatronics. I think what they did is they went to a person who crafts those and they were just given whatever they had. Okay, I'll get a whole bunch of this stuff. Here's this. I'll just give you everything. And it's like, well, what are you going to do? We're going to need some of this. But, well, we've got a Humpty Dumpty.
So one of the interesting choices that I thought Toby was very brave in making was that for the first 40 minutes of the movie, nothing really happens horror-wise. It's all them wandering around. It's all character building, all you getting to know the kids before they go off into the funhouse and get killed.
Well, it's the classic, you should care a bit about the characters before they're murdered so that the movie has more impact. I think one of the things that was great was none of the characters were overtly a jerk.
Well,
they were dumb kids in some ways, but
that's kind of subjective. Buzz is a little bit of a dick.
Yeah.
But he wasn't necessarily, you know, that wasn't his only character-defining trait.
No.
He just had jerk leanings.
Yeah. Because he, other than that, it seemed like, it's like, okay, he's a teenage boy. And some teenage boys act like dicks at certain points in their life without necessarily being bad people.
The other thing that I want to get into, the acting for the Barker crushed it. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Kevin was brilliant. There was this one scene where he was, very early on, I think the first or the second time we saw him, where he was like, who is brave enough to come into the funhouse? Who is man enough to come in here? You will be imprisoned by terror, but you will scream for release, but there will be no release. I loved that delivery.
Yeah, it was good also foreshadowing, because he was basically delivering it at Amy, our main character. The other thing I liked of Kevin's performance, in a scene where he's coming to his son and saying, we got to kill these kids. He's talking about things where earlier he seems very abusive to his son. But here it becomes, it's more reconciliation. I know I shouldn't, I get frustrated. I shouldn't yell at you. I know that a lot of this you can't help. I want to do good by you. You're my son. But if we're going to get out of this in one piece, we're going to have to go kill those kids. And there's this really interesting balance of, it's never quite clear. Are you just trying to manipulate your son into killing these kids? Or do you honestly care about him? Or is it a bit of both?
My money's on a little bit of both.
Yeah, but his performance makes it so you can have that. Well, which way is it really going? It's really kind of hard to tell. But I think it's a well-done part of the performance. But back to the kids. We spent 40 minutes establishing who these kids are. There's a vague sense of menace. You had mentioned the background characters, where some of them seem like they should be big deals, and they're not.
Yeah, we get in early on, as soon as they get there, they're in the girls are in the bathroom, and the crazy Ralph analog comes in and says, Jesus is watching you. And she pops up a couple of more times in the background, but she, and I'm like, okay, you're going to die. No. Okay, movie's rolling. Oh, I guess we're done. Crazy Ralph didn't die.
Or do anything, really.
Or do anything, yeah.
Other than cackle and kind of scare people. You also had this guy wandering around, seeming vaguely confused and covered in goo.
Why am I drippings with goo?
I think we made the assumption he was probably part of the freak show.
I think, yeah. We don't know.
Yeah, he was just sort of there.
So there's some weird non sequitur moments in this movie.
It goes nowhere.
Some of it is red herring trying to get you to see something that's not going to happen, and others are half finished ideas.
Or a lot of it might have been, hey, I have this colorful, interesting setting. Let's just throw some colorful, interesting people in.
Well, what I was thinking, in retrospect, what I think it probably was Toby wanted to spend the time with the kids. Well, he also didn't want to lose the audience's interest. So he can spend the time with the kids if he has these other characters that keep a sense of menace existing in the film without actually being our main threats. So that everyone, was this it? And then once you get into the main thing, you don't even think about them anymore because you're then into the plot.
So you got anything left you got to say?
I think I've covered everything.
All right. I guess that's an episode then. Say goodnight, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
So is the Funhouse left off the list appropriately?
Yes.
God, yeah. Even in the era, there were so much worse things going on. The story that this movie was put on the initial list by accident, by being confused with a much worse movie.
Oh, God.
Bears a lot of weight.
Even the one bit where Frankenstein gets caught in the gears at the very end and killed, I mean, was really bloodless. You could have gone completely over the top with sprays.
Well,
nothing.
Look at the blonde girl. It's kind of alluded to how she died. She had her head shoved through a fan prop.
But we don't see it.
We see none of this. I mean, Toby Hooper was amazingly restrained.
The only blood is the crazy magician act.
Yeah.
Where you stake through the heart and the girl goes bleh.
And that's fake even within the movie. So
yeah.
No,
yeah.
It's even any point where they could have gone gory, it's really interesting how Toby was implying more than showing. Even when Ricky gets the axe to the head, it's done in shadow.
Yeah, going super gory is not the mission statement of the movie.
No.
No, it's a suspense thriller.
Yeah.
The only two things that would really set Mary Whitehouse off is, one, it opens with nudity, and drug use.
All right, so acquitted, off the list.
Done.
So, Ian, my friend, did you like The Funhouse?
I like the movie. I really think I probably really, from a nostalgic point of view, would have liked it better if I had seen it closer to its release date. I really, really think it would have really been more a solid film. But in the years since it came out and with what I've been doing...
Horror's moved on?
Horror's moved on. And there's a lot of horror movie tropes in this movie that really make it not predictable, but...
You see the tropes coming down the road well ahead of where they would be in the
movie. Yeah. But it's a good movie. It's a well-made movie. Yeah. It's very well-made. I'm not a big fan of Tobe Hooper, but this is one of the ones that notches it up to I'm a fan of.
Did you like it?
Yeah. No, this was a great, for the movies we've watched on this series. No, this is a fine movie. I don't know that I like it as much as some of the others. But was it a decent film? Absolutely. Yeah. Did it accomplish its goals as a film? Yes, it did. Does its production values hold up? Absolutely. Good acting. Tobe Hooper knows what he's doing with film. I was noting a lot of points in the movie where it's like, oh, that was good foreshadowing, or that was a well-structured scene, was well shot. I mean, everything you would want in a movie like this. My only problem, and I think this goes back to what Ian said, is since I didn't see this closer to its when it came out.
You don't have the nostalgia goggles?
Yeah. To me, it's a fine but forgettable film. So did I like it? Sure. Is it something that would make great background noise? At a party? Yeah. Is it one I'm going to tell my horror movie film fan friends to watch? Probably not. But, you know, not because it's a bad film, but because there are better examples of the genre.
It might be one of those, if you saw it on, like, Amazon streaming or you saw it on Shudder, that you're like, well, what the hell? Okay, I'll waste 2 hours.
I have no complaints about this movie. I mean, for the genre and for what it was doing, no, I think it's fine. I think the homages to other horror films in the beginning were nicely done, and a little bit of a subversion of what the movie was actually going to be.
I enjoyed it. I liked it. No, it doesn't necessarily move the needle on the horror scale, but then not every movie has to.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was entertaining. It kept me paying attention for the hour and a half runtime. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
If you're going to watch Tobe Hooper, include this film.
Sure.
All right, there we go. We liked it all around. Yay!
And now, intermission. Refreshment time.
And that was the Funhouse. Be sure to check back in next week when we get another nasty off the shelf. In the meantime, please drop us a note. We'd love to hear from you. The address is thevideonastyproject@gmail.com. And we'll catch you next week. And I'm off to go to the happiest place on Earth. La, 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 la.